Good morning. Everyone hear me all right? Hello. Who said that already? All right. My name is Jared. I get the opportunity to preach this morning. I want to thank everyone who's been a part of the service so far, from the people who are here at 8:30 setting up and the musicians as they prepare and lead us in singing, and for Amanda and Tara and Mike and Lisi and the musicians and everyone who's been a part of this service so far. As I said, my name is Jared, and I get the opportunity to preach this morning. So we'll begin, and we can go to them. There's a big fish up there. One day, two men go fishing in a lake in their village. That same day, a giant, magnificent carp is swimming around in that lake, enjoying life and minding his own business. The carp suddenly sees a delicious worm squiggling around in the water. That looks like a tasty snack for him. Suddenly, he is yanked out of the water, hurled towards a great light, and dropped down in the middle of a small boat. Thump. The carp is terrified. He's grasping for air, flopping around like a fish out of water. The men put him in a bucket. "We caught this great fish, hooray!" says one of the fishermen. "What do you think we should do with it?" says the other. "Perhaps we can freeze him and eat him later in the week." The carp does not like this idea. "Perhaps we can sell him at the food market." The carp doesn't like this idea either. His life hangs in the balance. "Wait a minute," says one of the fishermen. "The prince is visiting our village today. He loves carp. Let's give the carp to him." They both agree that this is a great idea. The carp goes from being terrified to excited. "A moment ago, I was going to be frozen or sold. Now I'm going to a prince, and it's going to a prince who loves carp. I'm going to be with a prince who loves me." Isn't that exciting? The fishermen look up, and they see coming down a road to the lake the prince and his royal entourage. They paddle quickly back to the shore. The carp is getting more excited. "I'm going to the prince. His tail is wagging around like a golden retriever." The men come up to the prince. "Your majesty, we have a present for you. We know you love carp. This is for you." The prince, he sees the carp, and his eyes sparkle. He is grateful. "Thank you so much, kind fisherman." They hold up the carp for the prince to see. The prince examines the carp while the carp struts proudly. "I'm on display for a prince," he thinks to himself. "I do love carp. This is truly a great gift," says the prince. The prince then snaps his fingers like only a prince can. Come on. And a servant comes running up to do the prince's beckoning. He says, "Take this carp, kill it, and hand it over to our chef. He will be the main dish in our banquet tonight." The carp's expression changes. He goes from being excited to scared to angry. And he stares at that prince. "Hey, jerk face," the carp says. "You don't love carp. You just love yourself." The word love means different things to different people, as we can see. The prince viewed love in one way. He believed in a selfish love, a love where you are allowed to take whatever you desire for yourself. To him, love was equal to pleasure. Whatever it is that makes you happy, in this instance, a tasty fish. It does not matter if what you do hurts or kills another. Whatever it is that gives you pleasure, that is love. There is a word for this love, eros. There he is. This was the strongest and most popular word for love in the ancient world. The word came from a Greek god named Eros, though you might know him as Cupid. In Rome, he's Cupid. We see him on Valentine's Day as a little naked baby Cupid. And he was one of the world's most powerful gods. In Greek myth, it was Eros who was the force behind the creation of the universe. The Greeks saw his passion as the light and energy that gave life and creativity to the world. This Eros love, like the god it comes from, is powerful. It is that longing that is in you to get that object of desire that you think will make you happy and give you pleasure. The object can be almost anything. It may be a woman or a man. It may be a consuming drive to create something magnificent. It may be the longing for money or fame or power or security. Or for the religious among us, it might even be that desire to be the most holy or the most righteous person. Whatever it may be, the goal of Eros is to take that thing, that object of desire, and to have it for yourself, to control it and own it, for it to be yours. The Greeks said that the power of Eros was often overwhelming, but we gladly surrender to this power because we think it will give us something that'll make us happy. This love is everywhere today. This is every Bruce Springsteen song you've ever heard. It's Hungry Heart, it's Glory Days, it's Born to Run, it's that other song that sounds like Born to Run. It's his later work like Fast Car. Office? Nope. It's every Lady Gaga song on the radio right now. It's the bass thumping in every club you've ever been to. I know the clubbing experience. I'm down with youth. That's what I do. Thank you. The carp did not like this kind of love. To be on the receiving end of Eros isn't always what it's cracked up to be. You see what he's holding up there? That's a bow and he's just shot an arrow. This isn't a Hallmark, soft, fuzzy, naked baby Cupid. The bow and arrow was the ancient world equivalent of a machine gun. You hunt and kill with a bow. Some of you know what it's like to be hunted by Eros. You've probably had that same realization as that carp. You've been with someone and at some point you realize, hey, you don't love me. You just love yourself. The carp believes that when you love something, you must care for it and help it. Love must be good for the object of love. To love a carp means that even though he might be tasty, you give up your own appetite for pleasure and help that carp live. He knows that what the prince believes can't be love. Love must be something else. The author of the words we're going to look at today, a man named Paul, the words that Lisi read a few moments ago, Paul is a bit like that carp. He's writing to a young Christian community in the city of Corinth, where the belief in Eros love is prevalent. He looks around and sees what the people call love. He sees this Eros that is everywhere. And he says, this isn't love. This is something else. Paul has a different vision of love for the Christian community. And that's what we'll look at now. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things. It believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Paul wants these Corinthians to know that true love is not Eros. In fact, it is the opposite of Eros. Eros and his passions are impatient. Eros has to be envious and boastful. That's his deal. He wants his own way. There was a song that came out in the 80s that shook the world. It's called Jesse's Girl. Is anyone familiar with that song? Yes, raise your hands. Thank you, thank you. This is how it goes. Jesse's got himself a girl and I want to make her mine. I wish I had Jesse's girl. The song doesn't go, I'm so happy for Jesse because he's dating the girl that I like. No one will ever write that song because no one would ever listen to that song. No, it continues. He feels so dirty when they start talking cute. He wants to tell him that he loves her, but that point is probably moot. He wishes he had Jesse's girl. Eros love is envious and impatient. Eros doesn't really care about what is true or false, right or wrong. Eros doesn't care much about enduring and bearing difficult things. Eros doesn't have time for that. For Eros, the heart simply wants what it wants. You know one of the problems in the church of Corinth? There was a man who was sleeping with his stepmother. In a world of Eros love, that's perfectly acceptable, despite all the pain and turmoil it brings, because the heart wants what it wants. It doesn't have time for true, false, right or wrong. My heart wants what it wants. I thought about that line, and I've heard that was a famous line. Have you heard that phrase before? So I Googled it, which is how you find out things now. I Googled it, and I wanted to find out where that phrase came from. And it led me to an interview that a director was giving years ago. It was a story similar to what was going on in Corinth, almost the inverted version of it. It was about an older man who was dating a woman, and he decided he didn't love her anymore, and decided instead that he wanted to date her daughter. And they were famous people, so it was this crazy story and in the tabloids and things like that. And he was giving an interview, and his explanation was, hey, the heart wants what it wants. I want you to look at those last three words up there. And I want us to consider this for our own lives. Love never fails. Eros fails constantly. Our world does a good job hiding this fact. That's why every romantic comedy ends with an emotional scene where you run up to the one that you should have been with all along and confess your undying love. Then the movie ends before we know if they love each other enough to get married or if their love is going to last or whether anything happens after that. We just end with that moment. That's not real life, and that's not real love. Romantic comedies are lies from the bowels of hell. Anyone who has pursued love, you know you've been left empty. Anyone who's pursued that Eros love. Anyone who has been the recipient of an Eros love that had no power to endure, you know it fails. Pursue Eros and you find constant disappointment. Give it a shot. Live a life where you are kind and patient, only if it serves you in the moment, but not for a moment more. Live life as one who always insists on your own way. Live a life where you must prove yourself to others through boasting and arrogance. Live a life where you quickly give up and move on instead of bearing, trusting, believing, and hoping. What you will find is that this type of love will make you happy for certain moments in your life. Anyone who's ever made out with someone who they don't really care about, you know this is true. There's a window where that's a good idea. There's a smaller window where that's love. Then there's a big, long window that's the rest of your life that says that was a big, fat waste of time. Eros love will always leave you empty and broken. Eros fails. Paul says real love is different. Get rid of all those ideas. Get rid of those thoughts about Eros that permeate the world and those longings in you to just take things for yourself. This is love right here. This is the starting point. And understand that Paul's talking to the church of Corinth and he's saying these words for us to hear this morning. This is not I've heard you have an idea about love, and this is my other idea about love, and here are two love options. That's not what he's doing. And if you read Paul at all, he's not like that at all. That's not how Paul works. He's not simply showing them another love option. He's showing them another God. A God that is not Eros, but who Paul believes is the true King of love. Jesus is love. What you see up there in those four short verses is an explanation of the life of Jesus Christ. This love has an unending power that Eros knows nothing about. If you would take up a gospel and read about Jesus, what you will find is one who is kind to the hurt outcast, even as others are pushing that outcast aside. You will find someone who is patient with his friends and enemies. A man who, while on his way, gets constantly interrupted by needy people. And never does he insist on his own way, but instead tends to their needs. A God who humbles himself, takes the form of a servant, and walks among us. You can't be proud or arrogant or rude and do that. A man who cares about the truth, hates evil, and rejoices in good things. If you look at Jesus, you will find a man who believes when others can't believe. A man who says, "Come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. Cast your burdens upon me, for my yoke is easy, my burden is light." You will see a man who has hope for the hopeless and who endures all that other men and women cannot endure. A man who loves so much that he fully gives himself to all of them. A God who gives himself fully over to mankind. The love of Jesus is the opposite of this selfish Eros love. It's a love that is one constant act of self-giving to the other. Not only is he true love, but he has truly and fully loved you. We are the recipients of this love. It's not love that we on our own can go out and get. This is a love you need to first receive to understand. It's a love that comes from out of this world, but it does come and it comes to you right where you are. While we are sinners, while we chase after self-serving Eros love that constantly lets us down, while we make a mess of love, Jesus Christ comes and proves his love to us by dying for us. He bears our sin and the sins of humanity in that death. It is a total and complete self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice, that word encompasses everything you see up there. The full and total giving love is given fully over to us. Unlike Eros, this love does not fail. It goes beyond even death. The Christian confession is that Christ died on Good Friday. On that day, Jesus conquered our sin, and he purchased us back from death and hell. What we see on Easter morning is the resurrection and the dawn of a new creation. It is a love that conquers all. The perishable becomes imperishable. His love overcomes everything. This love that is for you does not fail you, will never fail you, and will even bring you through death into new life. To know that a real, unfailing love exists and comes to us right where we are is unbelievable. It's amazing. But this love is even more than that. It is not just a love to be received by individuals, as great as that is. It does not stop there, but it spreads. It's a love for the whole community. That when that community, the Christian community, grabs hold of, it then has the task to bring that love to others. This love is more important than you think. Look at what Paul says about how important this love is. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have all faith so that as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. In Corinth, they had all of these things. They had all of these good religious things. They hadn't practiced many of them. Tongues were this special prayer language where you could talk to God like the angels talk to God. I don't know how to do that. Do you? It's not easy, I assume. Prophetic powers, an understanding of all mysterious things, a deep well of knowledge, and a faith that could move mountains. All great stuff. All good things that any community that's trying to follow God would want to have. They had acts of charity and physical giving of their own body. But these gifts didn't make them complete. In fact, all of these good things instead serve to pull their community apart. There was bickering and jealousy in that community. that community was defunct. People ranked one another based on who had the best gifts. Something was clearly missing. Paul knew that they were missing one thing, the only thing that mattered. Love, and only love, counts. Love is the essential ingredient in the Christian community. If love is not there, then whatever you're cooking tastes wretched and needs to be spewed out. Everything that seems good to man, that seems good to a religious community without love, is worthless. Having this love and giving this love is more important than anything else. That was Corinth. What do we do, and does it count without love? I work with the high school students. I work with a lot of young people in this community. If I don't love them, what I'm doing is worthless. Many of you work with Orbitz and work with the young children here. Without love, nothing. You're a parent. A parent is a great thing. But what if you don't actually love your kids? Or what if you love them only when they really, really make you feel great? Does love matter? Of course it does. Any good thing done without love quickly becomes a bad thing. Even like Corinth, that very best religious things. You play music, you sing like an angel. Paul says you're a noisy gong without love. These various good ministries that take up so much of our time, or even a great faith and knowledge of God, without love, nothing. Everything done without love doesn't matter. Fill in the blank for whatever it is that you do. If I do this, but I don't have love, it's nothing. Paul charges the Christian community with the simple task. At the end of this chapter on love, there's two words. 1 Corinthians 14:1, pursue love. This is the command for the church that permeates the New Testament. Love one another just as I loved you. That's what Jesus said to his disciples. We love because he first loved us. That's what one of Jesus' disciples said to his disciples. Above all, clothe yourself in love, which builds everything in perfect harmony. That was Paul to another church. Provoke one another to love and good deeds. Keep yourself in the love of God. This is just about every New Testament author. This love is not impossible. It is possible to love this way because you have been loved this way. It is possible because the one who is love has given you power to love in this way. In this love, you are a new creation, made for the love that comes from Jesus. He wouldn't tell us to love this way if he didn't think we could do it. Christian community, we can, should, and need to be about this love. So pursue it. Pursue it in your home, at work, and with everyone you are with. Pursue it when you are lying down and when you rise up. Pursue it when you are at your table and when you are walking along the way. It's the only thing that matters. How can we not pursue it? Challenge one another to pursue this love. Here is something very practical. If you are in a small group or serve alongside others in this community, in our ministry team, or even if you know someone else that's a friend here, get together with them and consider your lives, whether you're pursuing love or not. Get together and consider that. Talk about whether you're loving in your daily life or whether you're spending a lot of time doing things that aren't love. Talk about it and then provoke one another to it. That sounds like a harsh word, provoke, right? You don't expect that in the Bible. I think of provoke, I think of a parent yelling at a kid about what they're doing to their sibling. Stop provoking your sister. But the Bible uses it, and so will I. Provoke one another to love. Provoke your friends in this community. Provoke the people you serve with. Get together, be with them, and call them on it. This is the love we were made for. I'm going to provoke you to it. Pursue the love. Pursue this love, and you will find that this is the love you were made for. All of the time that you've been impatient, unkind, and all the times that we've insisted on our own way, has anyone ever thought they were made for that? No. That's not what God intended for you. All the time you pursued Eros love, he failed you. In any of those failed pursuits, did you think, yes, this is what I'm made for? You didn't, because it's not what God made you for. You're not made for a love that fails. If you pursue this love, this Jesus love, you will find not only the love that you were made for, but you will also find yourself wrapped up in a love that never fails. Love is what counts. Jesus knew this, so he chose to love you. He chose to love us. He proved his love to us in death and in his new life. You've been shown that love, a love that is out of this world. You are now given the power and the strength to love others with that same love. Pursue it. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you this morning for a love that does not fail. We thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ, who came from the heavens to be with us and to love us, and to love us with a deep, abiding, unfailing love. We thank you for his kindness and patience with us. We thank you that he hopes and endures when we can't hope and endure. God, we thank you for love, a love that we don't understand. We ask you this morning that you would help us understand your love, that you would help us flee all counterfeit loves, abandoning the love that fails us, and grasping hold of the love that never lets us go. God, teach us as a community to love one another in this community, and to love all outside this community with the same passion and heart and self-giving love that you've loved this world. Show us how to pursue love. Teach us your ways, Lord. It's in your name we pray. Amen.